ideas.com podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of investorideas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I'll be going over a few public company announcements as well as some recent news regarding truck driver cannabis impairment. For public companies, I'll be looking at Tilt Holdings Incorporated trading on the NEO as TILT and the OTCQX as TLLTF, Bright Green Corporation trading on the NASDAQ as BGXX, Sundial Incorporated trading on the NASDAQ as SNDL, as well as High Tide Incorporated trading on the NASDAQ and the TSX Venture as HITI. So, starting right away with High Tide Incorporated, who filed its year-end audited 2022 financial results on January 30th, the highlights of which are included in this article, as well as you can also check out at hightideincorporated.com, as well as sedar.com, and more links in the article. Some of the highlights included a revenue increase by 97% to $356.9 million for the year end, and an increase sequentially from 14% to $102.0 million for the fourth quarter. Gross profit increased by 58% to $101 million, as well as adjusted EBITDA was a record $14.6 million for the year end, up 17% versus the prior year. So this is from Raj Grover, President Chief Executive Officer of High Tide. I'm thrilled to share these results, which once again deliver record-breaking revenue and adjusted EBITDA, which further solidifies High Tide's position as the largest revenue-generating cannabis company in Canada, with a current annual run rate of over $450 million. While these numbers demonstrate exponential revenue growth, it's also important to note that we have maintained adjusted EBITDA-level profitability for 11 consecutive quarters, and that we were cash flow positive from operations during the last fiscal year. In our opinion, this is because we have the strongest retail concept in Canadian cannabis, something that's backed by the fact that our Cabana Club loyalty program now has approximately 950,000 members across 151 Canadian stores. And I'm also excited to report that we've already upgraded over 6,000 members into an elite. As we continue to introduce more elite offerings, we anticipate upgrades to continue through 2023, providing us with an additional high-margin recurring revenue stream to further boost our bottom line. Considering the challenging macro environment and where our equity value stands today, we have meaningfully slowed down our M&A activity and are primarily looking at smaller, highly accretive brick-and-mortar opportunities to focus on free cash flow generation from our existing business lines. So you can read the list of the comments as well as the more detailed filings in the links attached in the article, or again, go to hightideinc.com or sedar.com. So I'd recently talked about High Tide's Elite program. Obviously, their Cabana Club loyalty program is really working for this company. And again, I talked about how they introduced the Elite program recently, and obviously now they've got over 6,000 members and continue to get more people. So again, there's a lot of things to look at from High Tide as a business standard when you're looking at Canadian retail and sort of how to survive and thrive within that environment. And I think High Tide has, again, done a lot of smart things over the past. Obviously, their finances are now starting to back that up very legitimately. For the last sort of 2 years, they've been on a good stride and probably will continue to do so. I also like at the end that he does discuss the slowdown of M&A activity, which goes in line with what we've started to see within the Canadian market. It hasn't slowed down as much within the U.S. market, but that's also because there are some new states that are just starting to recently onboard. But even still, what you've seen is a little bit of a shift of how companies are looking at mergers and acquisitions and what types of companies they want to work with and what scale of business they're looking to acquire. Again, mentioning that they're looking for more cash flow generating small scale operations, which I think is very similar to what we're seeing in a lot of U.S. markets as well. So definitely a good company sort of example to look at what's a successful option within Canada at the moment and where some of the competition is coming from, as well as kind of what we can expect to see over long term. Obviously, there's a lot of differences between the Canadian and U.S. market, but these are the types of things as far as creating an overall retail brand that I do think we're going to start to see more of within the U.S. with a lot of the MSOs. And again, just a good example of a couple things going on in the industry. Next, miscellaneous employee Teamsters Local Union 987 have won an unfair labor practice complaint filed against Sundial Growers Incorporated at the Alberta Labor Regulations Board. Alberta Labor Relations Board. Now, the Teamsters' complaint about Sundial's conduct in relation to a union organizing meeting being held by Teamsters 987 in July of 2022 And the purpose of the union meeting was to inform Sundial employees working at Sundial's cannabis growing and processing facility in Olds, Alberta, about the benefits of being represented by the Teamsters Union. And the information and organizer of the meeting was being held by Teamsters at the Olds Public Library, and the complaint alleged that Sundial managers intentionally disrupted the meeting. Now, after hearing evidence about what happened, the Alberta Labor Relations Board decided in favor of the Teamsters. The board ruled that Sundial's managers had intentionally and wrongfully disrupted the Teamsters' organizing meeting, and the Labor Relations Board held that Sundial had violated the Alberta Labor Relations Code by interfering with the representation of employees by a trade union. To remedy the misconduct, the board has directed Sundial to provide the Teamsters with access to Sundial's workplace so that Teamsters 987 representatives can meet with all Sundial employees for mandatory employee-paid union information and organizing meetings. Preston Quinton, the member engagement and recruitment coordinator of Teamsters 987, said, "We will always fight for workers across Alberta, and in this instance, employees were facing intimidation to refrain from learning about our union." He continues, "We're pleased with the outcome, and we want all workers to know that we stand with them." So obviously this follows the big announcement from Sundial just in the middle of January of the acquisition of all the issued and outstanding common shares of the Valens Company. So with approximately $262.5 million in net cash and no debt, Sundial will continue to have one of the strongest balance sheets in North America and will also have the highest pro forma consolidated net revenue among all Canadian cannabis companies based on the last fiscal quarter of each company on an annualized basis. So obviously Sundial continues to grow. The acquisition of the Valens Company, I think, is a very positive thing for them. This Teamsters labor practice complaint, I don't think this will negatively impact them very dramatically. It's just an interesting thing to sort of note within the cannabis industry that still you don't really see. At least in Canada, there's very limited sort of unionization or options for cannabis employees, whether you're in the production level or in the retail level, to really have union representation. It's not something that's really jumped into this industry that dramatically. Similarly, in the U.S., there's a limited amount of involvement compared to most other industries. And especially when you're looking at the production side, it's a fairly labor-intensive job. There are, I wouldn't say a lot of risks, but there definitely are risks involved with that occupation. Again, when you're doing intensive labor, there's going to be back problems. There's going to be all sorts of things. Obviously, the irony is that in lots of areas where cannabis is being produced, the employees aren't really getting sort of a discounted access to that cannabis or encouraged to consume cannabis either before or after their shift, really. Which would alleviate some of the back pains or joint pains and stuff that they might get from being in certain pruning positions for a long time or for doing some of the labor-intensive work that has to go into the production of cannabis products. So there's a lot of sort of weird elements when you're looking at the employment ability or the employment sort of status of the cannabis industry. In this small case, again, I don't think it's going to that negatively impact Sundial. As again, I think they're riding a pretty positive streak at the moment, but it is just something to be aware of when you're looking at the industry as a whole is, you know, union representation hasn't really jumped into the cannabis industry that much. How will that change things as you move forward? There are a lot of complaints already about the cost of labor for this industry, how that impacts overall pricing and operation costs. And then at the same time, you're hearing from lots of employees in different parts of the industry that there's a lot of issues with sort of what access you get as far as benefits and sort of representation within your industry as an employee. Obviously, there's a lot of jobs being created from the cannabis industry, but this will be some of the things that still haven't really been worked out that aggressively. And obviously, in the states, the sort of legal status federally is keeping a lot of these companies out or keeping a lot of the union representation and some of the insurance options and a lot of the different options that employees would normally have access to out of the industry. And this is something that will need to be considered and could be a good reason to why certain lawmakers, there's already been another push from the GOP to try to have a rescheduling of cannabis. But I don't know if that's going to get any traction, but this could be an argument to move towards rescheduling or a decriminalization of cannabis within the U.S. one of the arguments to bring forward is that as you have it federally illegal, there's a lot of employee safety nets that get removed, and there's a lot less power that these employees really have when dealing with their employers. And I'm not necessarily saying that there's a lot of labor issues going on within the cannabis industry, but there's always going to be some. And a lot of these issues, again, these employees don't have tons of access to actually deal with these properly. And there will be sort of moments of intimidation or sort of manipulation, because these companies know that these employees can kind of be removed a little bit easier than in other industries. Looking next at Bright Green Corporation, who is one of the very few companies selected by the U.S. government to grow, manufacture, and sell legally under federal and state laws, cannabis and cannabis-related products for research, pharmaceutical applications, and affiliated export, announced that it's commenced utilization of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services EB-5 program to accelerate its 2023 growth strategy and generate significant capital for use in its greenhouse construction operation in Grants, New Mexico. Now, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services administers the EB-5 program, under which investors, their spouses, and unmarried children under 21 years of age are eligible to apply for a green card if they make the necessary investment in a commercial enterprise in the U.S. As a requirement, the investment made by the applicants associated with each visa issued must create or preserve a minimum of 10 permanent full-time jobs for qualified U.S. workers. The EB-5 program, which President Biden reauthorized in 2022, is an innovative vehicle for spurring investment and job creation in rural communities. Now, today marks a significant step for Bright Green as we make further progress executing on our strategy in our facility in New Mexico, said Bright Green's executive chairman of the board, Terry Raffi. The EB-5 reauthorization allows us to generate the capital required to execute on our plans to create a world-class facility in New Mexico and recruit the best scientific minds in the world. It's extremely exciting that this initiative will be not only supporting our ability to deliver our vision for the region and our revenue-generating plans, but importantly, it will also have a positive social and economic impact for the rural communities in this state. Governor of New Mexico, Michelle Lujan Grisham, said, "I congratulate the Bright Green team on the launch of its EB-5 program. President Biden has reauthorized the EB-5 program, which is now an advantage for projects in rural America. And this federal initiative signals the opportunity for the creation of a significant number of new jobs in New Mexico and across the U.S., which is very welcome news. And I'm delighted to share this announcement with the Bright Green team today." So, a couple of interesting things there. Obviously, Bright Green being one of these few companies that is sort of protected under federal as well as state law. This has been with the research opportunity that Biden had announced a little while back. Again, we are starting to see how that's going to play out within the industry, what impacts that's going to have. And this is, again, the type of thing that a lot of people who are in support of cannabis reform law in the U.S. are pushing for, is these types of initiatives, having access to programs like the EB-5 program. Again, having a lot of these government institution access points where you can actually help your employees, you can spur growth in the community, and you can be a more legitimized business, basically, in a lot of senses. A lot of this is, again, denied to the cannabis industry because of federal regulations. So when you see things like this, it's definitely a good sign that things are heading in a better direction, and it does add more legitimacy to the industry. And hopefully we'll see more of this in the coming year. I think 2023 could be very positive in a lot of ways when you're looking at cannabis reform, at least on a state-by-state level. You could see some of these states start implementing more initiatives to bolster the industry, as I think that a lot of them are starting to realize that there's a lot of benefits coming out of the cannabis industry, both sort of locally and generally for the state, when you're looking at both like a citywide as well as a statewide impact. There's been a lot of positive outcomes, and I do think, you know, as we see more initiatives like this being utilized by the industry, hopefully it creates somewhat of a snowball effect and that benefits people overall. And again, it's still something that when you're looking at employment opportunities, when you're looking at employment safety or safety for your employees, sort of benefits, job guarantees, a lot of these things, even just having job security, a lot of these things are still kind of up in the air depending on which state you're in or which, you know, company you're working with. But in order for the cannabis industry to really gain more legitimacy and more traction, those will all be need to be addressed. And hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later. Lastly, looking at Tilt Holdings, who announced the Pennsylvania launch of Black Buddha Cannabis, a black and woman-owned and led environmentally conscious social impact-driven cannabis wellness brand. Previously launched in Massachusetts, it's now available across Pennsylvania from Tilt's subsidiary, Standard Farms LLC. Launching in two key markets is exciting and only achievable with a strong partnership. I value the team effort and collaboration with Tilt, as well as our shared commitment to creating space in the cannabis marketplace for quality products from diverse producers, stated Roz McCarthy, founder and chief executive officer of Black Buddha Cannabis. McCarthy's vision is for Black Buddha Cannabis is to promote optimal wellness across every aspect of life and support each patient to achieve their potential and live with passion and purpose. If you want to find out more information about Tilt Holdings, I highly recommend listening to our recent interview with Gary Santos, CEO of Tilt Holdings, with the link attached in the article. It's one of the previous podcasts that we put out, where he did talk about the different brands that they're working with, and it kind of explains, he does a good job of explaining which brands they choose to partnership with and how they choose their partners and sort of what is working well within the industry on a state-by-state level and some of the issues other companies are facing. And I do think as well, it's something that, again, speaks to sort of the change in perspective on what type of companies larger corporations are looking to work with right now. When you're looking at some of the bigger cannabis MSOs, they're looking now to work with these types of Black Buddha cannabis brands. You know, black, woman-owned, environmentally conscious, socially impact-driven. Those are a lot of the key buzzwords that obviously help promote the brand much better. But I do think a lot of it is also just focused on small brands that actually care and have sort of a simple business setup that's going to be successful in a few different key niche markets, instead of looking at brands that need to be elevated or brands that need to be, you know, developed out further. A lot of these companies are now looking for brands that are kind of already complete and just looking for a little bit of expansion. And he had mentioned, and I do think that this is something I've mentioned a lot of times and something the industry obviously sort of backs up, which is look at the craft beer industry. Again, you're going to see these MSOs kind of collecting a small house of brands that they work with. Those brands are basically self-sustaining and self-operating, and then the MSOs are basically just handing the distribution and the scalability, which I think is the best model and the model that has brought the most success to the industry overall, whether you're looking at the US or Canada. That type of business model seems to be performing the best. And I do think it's just the one that makes the most sense is when you're looking at growers and when you're looking at a lot of these sort of cannabis mad scientist types, it's kind of best to leave them to their own devices and simply aid them in some of the minor business aspects that they might be lacking in. So again, I would highly recommend listening to that recent interview with Gary Santo. And lastly, in other recent news, nearly 41,000 truck drivers tested positive for marijuana in 2022, which is a 32% increase over 2021, according to a report recently compiled from the data in the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration's Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. Now, the new report shows that more than 100,000 truck drivers have tested positive for marijuana since the FMCSA opened the clearinghouse on January 6th of 2020. And truck drivers who test positive for marijuana and other drugs are prohibited from driving and must enter a return-to-work process and retest to get back behind the wheel. Cocaine, methamphetamines, and amphetamines place second, third, and fourth, respectively, among substances according to the most truck driver drug test failures. And the top four drugs accounted for 90% of the 177,000 total positive test results in the three-year history. Unfortunately, the number of marijuana positives in the clearinghouse continues to trend in the wrong direction, said Dan Horvath, vice president of safety policy for American Trucking Associations. When you take into account legalization efforts across the country, coupled with misinformation about when marijuana use is legal or not, I'm not at all surprised. The simple fact is, not a thing has changed with regard to the DOT-regulated industry, specifically CDL holders. And there's a good graph that's attached in the article that I do recommend checking out slightly. Obviously, it just shows kind of where things are heading. And this is something that I bring up because it's something that I've talked about before. When the trucker protests were happening in Canada, it was something that I mentioned as far as alternative impacts when you're looking at the trucking industry overall, is that, you know, obviously there was a big protest over vaccine mandates, but at the same time, they could have rehired thousands of truckers within Canada or in the U.S. who had, again, failed these cannabis infractions. And this is kind of the double standard here when you're looking at cannabis versus other substances. Is cannabis is a very different substance in how it binds to your body. It binds to your fat cells. So it is going to stay in your system in ridiculously longer than almost all other substances you can take. For instance, the other top four, amphetamines, methamphetamines, and cocaine, can all be easily detoxed out of your system. And I know this firsthand from working in cannabis retail and working in head shops where we sold detox kits and we sold them to truckers on a daily basis, an insane amount of them. And that's just from a few small locations in my local community. When you're looking at the overall detox sales market, it's preposterous. It's an insane thing. It's a legal thing, which also feels crazy. But these are legal products that will detox these substances out of your system, some of them within 3 hours. And then there's also the fake urine kits, which can be sold online, in stores. And these are sold as fetish urine kits, but they are still, again, intended to pass drug tests. And the main people who are buying these are truckers across the board. We saw this, again, directly on an in-store basis, on a daily, very standard, easy sale basis. And I've looked at the online sales. They're pretty outrageous. And this isn't going to be changing anytime soon. And so when you look at how these are all getting compared, obviously amphetamines, methamphetamines, cocaine, these are a lot more impactful as far as your actual impairment while driving. These could cause much more dangerous scenarios to happen. Marijuana, yes, obviously does still cause a form of impairment, but it's a little bit of a less impactful and different form of impairment. Again, most of the time, people who are under the influence of cannabis don't drive because of the paranoia aspect. And that's a different thing when you're looking at amphetamines, methamphetamines, cocaine, is those things remove some of your inhibitions and make you more likely to take risk-prone behavior. Marijuana does not, at least not at the same level. And again, there's going to be a lot of debate in the scientific community about those studies. There's always needing more data. Marijuana is always so scary. But the reality is that you could have smoked a joint today, and usually for about 60 days, it will stay in your system where you could fail a drug test. And this is kind of the confusion, and this is the difficulty, is that the technology for testing these drugs, specifically for cannabis, is still really in its infant stage. I've talked about these companies in the past a dozen different times. The breathalyzers have a lot of issues. Almost all of the technology we have out there to test cannabis drug use in your system is pretty unreliable in that it's not going to tell you when you actually ingested the cannabis. It's just going to show that you have it in your system. And again, if you're a heavier person, which I'm not saying all truck drivers are, but a lot of them are bigger guys, it's going to stay in your system even longer because it's going to bind to more fat cells. It also helps bind with testosterone. So big guys who have some weight on them are kind of the most fucked when it comes to cannabis staying in your system for the longest amount of time. On the alternative side, those same people could detox cocaine, methamphetamines, amphetamines, pretty much every other drug out of their system within about 3 to 5 hours with one of these detox drinks. Those same detox drinks often fail with cannabis. This is something we had to run into a lot when dealing with sales directly or dealing with online sales of these detox products, is that actually a lot of them don't work when it comes to cannabis. And sometimes people would have to take 3 or 4 of these detox kits over the course of a week to get their cannabis levels low enough for them to pass the test. And this is sort of, again, the double standard and the unfair comparison. And it's the problem we have overall when you're looking at cannabis as both an industry and just how it's represented in society, is it does get compared with cocaine, methamphetamines, heroin, all of these extreme drugs which have caused deaths and catastrophes and lots of lives. And cannabis has caused catastrophes in lots of lives in the sense of people being arrested and sent to jail, people losing their jobs. But when it comes to actual deaths, when it comes to actual impacts on health, cannabis really is in a league of its own compared to a lot of these other substances, which are destroying people's lives on a daily basis. So it's definitely something to consider. It's also something to consider the amount of truck drivers that are not on the road because of this. 41,000 truck drivers in 1 year is an insane amount of people to be off the road, possibly for the full year. They have to go through these tests. They have to go through programs to get back onto the road. Some of them may choose not to. Some of them may choose to find alternative occupations after this. There's also the issue that a lot of these truck drivers are taking cannabis for medical reasons, that they're taking this to deal with the pain from being in a sitting position for a long period of time and the sort of joint aches and back pains that come with that job. And so what do you do when someone tests positive for something that they're taking for a medical reason, but they can't properly detox out of their system? And again, they could have had this, had a joint on the weekend, work 5 days a week. It's still going to fail the test in their system all those 5 days, even if they've only had literally one joint on the weekend. So it's definitely an issue that needs to be sort of addressed, and definitely something to think about when you're thinking about the amount of sort of employment failures that are going on in multiple industries. When you're looking at the lack of workforce that you can get into most industries right now, this is going to be a factor. And as more states onboard medical or recreational programs, if any companies, and especially a lot of federally run companies, again, they will have these drug tests and they will be removing employees who fail these drug tests, or at least making them go through some sort of rigmarole to get back into the industry. And those are a lot of employees that we could be utilizing and we probably need. There are also employees who probably are concerned with their health and are taking positive steps to try to get off of much more dangerous opioids, which have been much more disastrous to a lot of industries and people's lives. But it's, again, a weird problem when you're looking at it, and especially when you're looking at a lot of these labor-intensive jobs or jobs that are a little more blue-collar. It's impacting them dramatically. And again, 41,000 truck drivers is nothing to kind of ignore. That's a lot of people who could be working on the road. That's also going to impact the entire distribution and transport industry, where you're going to have supply chain issues. And if this continues to happen, and again, you have to think of how many federally run businesses deal with overall supply chains and distribution. It's most of them. And again, most of those institutions are going to have drug tests at a semi-regular basis, and a percentage of employees will almost guaranteed fail those drug tests if they've been consuming cannabis either medically or recreationally due to the longevity of it staying in your system. So it's definitely something, like I said, that should be considered. And also, some of this news today was brought to you from Marijuana Moment. I highly recommend checking out the website. There's a link attached in the article. Great resources for cannabis news, as well as really good information regarding regulations in each state for psychedelic law, as well as cannabis law reform. That's all for today's podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day.
That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated CM certification. InvestorIdeas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact InvestorIdeas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the InvestorIdeas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.